The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. Yes, indeed, it's your turn. Your opportunity to ask the pastor, Pastor Mark Femmel, from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, in the studio with us today. Hello, Pastor.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You've got children?
I do.
What ages?
5 and 3.
Oh. So you're back into somewhat of a routine, I guess, with the 5-year-old. You got school starting this year? Or not yet?
We do. We have just started kindergarten.
Yeah. Is it fun? You take pictures the first day?
We didn't take pictures, but she's having a blast. She's adoring it.
Ready to go. Now, the kids in your parish, are they beginning catechism classes again?
They are. They just started on Sunday, and then we're going to have our first pastored catechumen encounter for our 7th graders, and the 8th graders are coming back for the second year Wednesday.
Do you look forward to that?
I do. It's really neat because kids keep you on your toes. They make sure that you know your stuff because they don't have any of those barriers or walls that say, well, it's not appropriate to ask that question. So,
Now, do you have a separate youth program at your church, or do you just integrate everything together?
We do have a separate youth program. We call our youth group, I don't know if I'm infringing a trademark, so if DC Talk is listening, I'm sorry. But they were a band who made the song Jesus Freak. And then the Voice of the Martyrs picked up this topic as they wrote a bunch of books about a bunch of people that lived radically for the faith, chose to become freaks, not just kind of casual Christians on Sunday morning. And many of them die in the book, but they have these martyrs who have either died or have lived through pretty intense situations. And it's only about one or maybe at the most like 4 pages per person. And it's really addicting to watch this and read these books because you always want to see, all right, what great thing did God bring his people through next? And what's next? And it's awesome. You see the grace of God drip all over those pages. But so taking that, I took for our youth group, our high school and college age kiddos, the term Jesus Freaks, because we're not going to be non-Christians, we're going to be different from the world, but we're also not going to be lazy, casual Christians who just kind of, you know, sit around and wait for Jesus to show up and know he's going to take care of everything else in between. We want to be on the front lines and seeing those front lines victories of our Lord.
When you were a kid growing up, did you listen to Christian music?
A little bit. I actually used to listen to heavy metal.
Really?
And, yeah, oddly enough. And that whole grunge thing, that was cool for about 2 weekends.
Perhaps you're still young enough where you feel like you can really relate to those youth, huh?
Well, it does help that I'm younger, but if you don't know how to relate to youth, get a really, really good book.
Oh, yeah?
Or just start hanging out with your youth group and just have fun
events. Just be with them, yeah.
Yeah, you'll see what's important to them, and don't look down at what they like, or don't say, well, that's just a kid thing, and when they grow up there, they'll be mature and they won't see that's important enough. If it's important to them right now, use it for the gospel.
Listening to all the coverage of 9/11, we learned that there's a whole generation of kids out there that vaguely remember it happening.
Right.
It was off their radar.
Right. Mm-hmm. One of those things when gas prices were a dollar a gallon, you know. One of those things those old people talk about.
Phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So as you approach teaching confirmation class, do you have certain goals that you set for yourself?
I do. I've got 2 goals. One is to work on the part of the catechism we've assigned for that year, and then the other part is to get as much of the Bible stories into the lives in a very relevant way where they can feel solidarity, you know, like a connection to these people, and not to turn the Old Testament or the New Testament to you know, parables for their own life, but you know, to say, look at how God took care of David when he was knocking down Goliath, and look at all the fear and all the things that were going on before them. We don't know that God said, well, go against Goliath and I'll take him down on the first stone, because David took more than one stone, you know. And but it's just they get to see themselves as people of God saw themselves so long ago.
Are there any kids in your parish that opt out of the confirmation process? And then how do you handle that?
None that I know of. There's a couple of there's a couple of situations in every congregation, you know, where somebody, if you have a two-year program, which we have, mm-hmm. where, you know, the kiddo doesn't sign up until the last year or something like that. But 1 year is better than no years.
I remember my daughter was reluctant to do that, and it's mainly because she didn't know a lot of the kids at our church. We lived too far away, and she knew more of the kids in her neighborhood and from her school at a different Lutheran church, so
sure.
that worked.
Sure.
We went to the nearby Lutheran church where she was with her friends. She had a buddy system, and I remember asking Pastor Lukowski, I said, boy, she really doesn't want to do this, and he says, oh, just make her. Just take her and make her. She'll be fine. And she was glad she did it.
Good.
And then
good.
Years later, it was interesting. I remember one night late after her boyfriend went home, I look in the living room, and there on the coffee table is her little blue catechism. So I asked her the next day, what was that all about? And she says, oh, he's Baptist. And so we were discussing baptism. So that really, really paid off, I think.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So just make them, huh? Make them go?
Well, you know, I always tell parents of kids who really don't like going to church, and grandparents of kids and grandkids who don't like going to church, if you guilt them into doing it, the only reason they're there on Sunday morning or Wednesday night, I guess, is because you're making them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at some time, as a parent, you got to say, you know, I don't care if you want to do dance. You're going to do your homework. But especially if your kids are kind of independently minded, you go to church not because, you know, great grandma's looking down from heaven saying, go to church or I'll haunt your house. You know, it's not like God's going to say, if you don't go to church four times this month, I'm going to give you brain cancer. I mean, you go to church because you recognize the gifts of God are there. You go to church because you realize when you walk away on Sunday, you're a changed person. You go to church because when you hear a sermon that really touches on something, you remember it. Like we were talking earlier, there was a sermon I preached 7 years ago now, and it still sticks with people. My wife still remembers my first sermon. I used Lucky Charms versus Lucky Charm cereal as the image lesson, saying that God's not a lucky charm. You just kind of rub his belly or you put him in your pocket and pull him out when you need it. He's like total. He takes care of everything. You know, he's 100% good for you. And I compared the nutrition labels. Nothing against Lucky Charms. They taste good, but, you know, you get the metaphor. And my wife still remembers that my first sermon, like, 9 years ago. And, you know, when you go to church, you get that opportunity. But not only that, you also get to hear a little bit of God's word that you didn't hear before, and you also get to tell God thank you for everything that he's done. And also you get to run to him with all sorts of reasons that you need to see him take care of you this week and ask for it in prayer. And then you also get to have your sins washed away, and you get the body and blood of Jesus put right in your lips. And goodness, the Lord's Supper itself isn't enough for a reason to show up and listen to a sermon that you don't like, or songs that you don't hear on the radio. Holy smokes. At least do it for that.
Pretty tough to get Junior to go to church when Dad doesn't.
They've done studies, and one of the studies that I'm kind of tossing around in my head is if Mom is the only parent that goes to church, kids have a 20-ish, 25-ish percent chance of being adult Christians. If it's just Dad and not Mom, it's in the 70s. But if it's both, it's something like 90 or 97%, I saw one place. And, you know, parents, you're teaching your kids, and grandparents, you're teaching your kids and your grandkids what's important and what's not important. They're learning how to be a people from you. And if you're going to tell them it's important to have a religion and have faith in God and, you know that he'll take care of you, but you don't show it that, they're going to go to the least common factor.
When you were in college, did you attend church regularly, or did you have a period in your life where you sort of fell away?
I used to go to church and Sunday school 100% of the time. And one time, my brother and was in Sunday school, and the Sunday school teacher thought it'd be really neat to teach them how to hotwire a car and how to solicit apparently drug deals, so that way
he could see
that he was cool. And then also show them that, you know, as bad of a guy as he was, that Jesus could take him back, he'll definitely take them back. So, I mean, I'm assuming it has some good illustrations, but you can make a reference to hotwiring the car. You can actually teach them how to hotwire a car, and, you know, you're only going to make so much good out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So they stopped going to Sunday school when I found out that my brother wasn't going to Sunday school. I said, why do I have to go to Sunday school? And so then we took a little break from that, but we went to Sunday worship every Sunday, even when we were out of town, and we weave, and
your parents set the example.
They did. Mm-hmm. They did. And then when I was in high school, we started going to adult Bible study, and it was awesome because I got to talk to my pastor right after Bible study of all the questions that were on my mind. And I get such a kick out of it. I know it's going to come back and get me, and I look forward to the day, but I used to follow my pastor from Bible study to late service, and even help him get his robes on so I would have more time to ask him questions and test the faith. And when I told him, I said, what does it take exactly to be a pastor? And he said, so when are you going to the seminary? He knew it before I did.
So you had a mentor there, huh?
I did. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, people pick their superstars, and I'd rather be their superstars, not be someone snorting cocaine up their nose mm-hmm. or having a flavor of the week in another human being. Than I'd rather have a Christian role model. He is a pastor in San Antonio, Texas, Pastor Dan Mueller.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to have him on some co-host the morning show with me, and we'll bring him on the air. That'll be good. Are you mentoring anyone in your church right now? Is there a young man that you can tell might be headed for the same role in life you have, that call?
Who knows the Spirit of the Lord, but the Lord, who knows his mind? But there's a couple of people in our congregation, not so much among our younger folk, but who have really just become on fire for the faith, and they cannot get enough of carrying their cross. And it is so cool to have a coworker, a brother or a sister in Christ that... that it clicks for, and it's an amazing thing. It is an amazing thing.
And last time I think we spoke, that was after the tornado, Good Friday, and you were mentioning how folks in your congregation were really doing some powerful outreach in the community. What's happening now?
I'm glad you asked. This wasn't a setup, but on September 23rd, which I suppose is, what, 2 weeks from now, it's a Friday, mm-hmm. we're going to have a parents' night out, and from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock, we're going to have... a bunch of people who are going to be around to take care of your kiddos. It's $5 per kid. And if you're listening to the radio, and I know people listen to the radio because I hear about it, but it's only $5 per kid, and you cannot get a babysitter that cheap. But we'll take care of them. We'll fill them with Jesus. We'll talk to them. We'll hang out with them, entertain them, and at the same time, parents are going to be given some flyers that are going to give them some decent deals on restaurants in the area. Because you can't go too far, and, you know, if you're a young parent, you don't have a whole lot of cash, so we're trying to keep it as cheap as possible. We'd love to get you free food, but restaurants aren't in the business of giving away free food, so we're trying to work hard to get some deals for them, help them out, help us out. And 6 to 10, so that way you can get dinner, get a movie, reconnect, catch up on some TV shows that you want to watch.
A date night.
Just sit there and even go to McDonald's and just sit across the table and talk. Without somebody telling you they need Cheerios or yeah. milk or food or to go to the bathroom or something.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A story from the Salt Lake Tribune. Americans consider religious freedom a cornerstone of society but fall short in their tolerance of Muslims, according to a poll released recently that probes attitudes toward immigrants and the nation's safety 10 years after the September 11th terrorist attacks. The survey also showed acceptance of Mormons continues to lag behind other minorities, with 67% expressing favorable views of Latter-day Saints, compared with 84% for Jews and 83% for Catholics. And that finding comes as two Mormons, Mitt Romney and John Huntsman, pursue the Republican presidential nomination. Mormons very high profile right now, and they're mainstreaming their religion with billboards and ads on TV and such. Although a mainstream Christian would consider them being members of a cult.
Right.
Did you study much of Mormonism when you were in college?
I know a little
seminary,
bit about it.
A little bit about it.
I know a decent amount.
Uh-huh. And you're probably well aware of the fact that they're trying to be just like us, you know, Glenn Beck and Israel and that whole thing that he carried out a few weeks ago, a promotion.
That's the idea behind all these commercials where you have a person who says, I'm a grandpa, I love going fishing, I like black leather shoes, I don't like wearing a suit, I'm also Mormon. And they're orchestrated to say they're just like you. Well, they are just like you. They wear clothes. They have kids. They have hair. When they drive cars. And when they live in a house, they live in a house. But, you know, the theology that they teach is vicious. And what's bizarre is if somebody were going to talk to me about theology, talk to me about God or anything, I would love to make time for them. They actually have a no-call list. I'm on their no-call list in that Mormons do not come to my door anymore, because one time I talked to two of them for about 3 or 4 hours, and I kept poking holes in their, in what they were teaching. And as soon as I paint them into a corner, they jump to a different topic. And I'd say, now hold on, let's come back to that in a second, because that's a great idea to talk about that too, but let's kind of finish up this conversation. And then they'd try to jump to another topic. And I'd say, all right, well, we'll come to that, back to that too, but let's finish up here. And it is bizarre, the stuff that they teach, and they can't back it up out of the Bible, but they say they do, they say they can.
Can you share with us a couple of specifics? I'd find that fascinating, because I've never opened the door. I just didn't want to get involved in it.
Well, for one thing, they say that, like the tribe of Ephraim, you know, this lost tribe, they hop in boats, I guess canoes or something, they land in the New World, and then they start this new race over there, and then the people who are good and faithful... they stay white, but then the people who are bad and vicious and dark, and they go after evil, they turn black. And they had this huge, colossal, big war, and all the white people, meaning the good people, they're killed off, and all the black people, the evil people, according to Mormonism, they live. That's where you get the Native Americans, according to them. And I said, now, so you'd want to trace your lineage as a pure priest, this pure believer, this pure lineage, back through Ephraim? And he says, yeah. And I said, and that's pure blood. And he says, yeah. And then I said, now Joseph didn't marry a Jewish girl. Joseph married an Egyptian, which means Ephraim is only 50% as pure blood as his cousins. Well, that's not true. That's not true. Well, tell me where I'm wrong. Well, it's pure. Well, but it's not. You know? And then I would talk about this New World thing, and I'd say, how come in archaeology, when I mean, you've got very good descriptions of where these places are in the New World, of these big cities that were there, these big metropolises that were there, these big wars that were there, and when we dig, we don't even find arrowheads there. We not only don't find buildings, we not only don't find skeletons, we don't even find arrowheads or sharpened rocks. So how could these huge cities just vaporize? Well, they just haven't found them yet. Well, no, I mean, look in the Book of Mormon. It tells you specifically where these things are, and you can look and see that the Mormons have tried to find these things, and they just aren't where they said they are, which means Joseph Smith either made this stuff up or it's the real deal. And they would kind of waffle on that, and they would try to jump to another topic and say, well, let's just look at where Joseph Smith got his history. He had a couple of tricks. One trick he had special glasses made, and he had these two different rocks. One instead of lenses, and he looked through these lenses and he could read these plates. And then another time he's looking through a hat at these plates, and these golden plates that he supposedly got when he was digging around and they were taken up into heaven, nobody could look at them. But then if anybody looks at them, they die. But then after a little while, when people started doubting that they were there, he found a couple of his good friends, and all of a sudden now they can look at them. And when they looked at their accounts and the people who were eyewitnesses of these plates, their descriptions of them don't even agree. And why is it, if Joseph Smith got these from plates that were written in ancient Egyptian, why is it that a good deal of the Book of Mormon is a direct plagiarism out of the King James Bible? So, I mean, it'd be stuff like that, you know, just eroding away the foundations of their faith. I mean, you get all this weird stuff where Jesus, according to Mormonism, is the brother of Satan. And just bizarre stuff that, I mean, Mormonism, it is almost as far out as you get.
It sounds like science fiction.
Well, you know, it's worse, because science fiction, people say, oh, what a funny story, that's wonderful. You know, when people are Mormons, man, they dupe you. They tell you this is true. And, you know, if you're a guy, if you're really good, you'll get your own plan. You'll be a god just like the Father. And if you're a girl, if you happen to find a guy who cares enough to call you out of non-existence after you die, well, then he can pop out spirit babies for all his little creations forever. It's just bizarre.
Is it a theology of glory to some extent? Do Mormons think they'll be more successful here if they're Mormon? What keeps them hooked? I don't understand.
I mean, it's a culture of mind control. They do not like when people start asking questions or when people start poking around. That's why I never get any Mormons to visit me. If you're a Mormon and you're listening, 3119 Donny Cave Lane, Maryland Heights, Missouri, 63043.
You're good.
Come visit me.
You take it on. 3 hours you invested.
Well, I'm not going to attack you. I just want to know the truth. And if I'm wrong, it's your responsibility to win me over, not to put me on a don't call list. If I'm wrong, and you're Mormon, come visit me, because it is your God-given responsibility to talk to me. Even if I don't accept what you believe, even if I don't teach what you believe, even if you think I'm a hard sell, if I'm wrong, then God's on your side, and he can change my heart. If I'm right, accept the facts and admit it.
See, I'd have a hard time voting for someone who's a Mormon because of that. If they think on that level theologically, then what else is flawed in their thinking?
You know, I don't want to, you know, the church and state issue, I don't want to peeve anybody off, but, you know, there are some oddities. The Mormons are not only a religious entity, they're also a very successful financial entity. But, and that causes some worry among some people, but does that mean that it's okay to vote for somebody who says they're Christian but never attends church? Mm. You know, I mean,
why am I more comfortable with that?
Yeah.
You know, that's a flaw in my thinking.
The devil wears a lot of masks.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And perhaps a Muslim would be held in higher regard than a Mormon.
You know, they Muslims, if they take the Quran seriously, they are commanded to mix church and state and to bring the state under their religion. So, I mean, it is a scary thing. If you want to be scared, don't watch the movie The Exorcist. Read the Quran. And there's one place where it says that Muslims are commanded to lie in wait and ambush for Christians and strike them at the neck. I mean, that's a command.
You've read the Quran.
I haven't read the entire thing. It's not worth my time, but I've heavily read it through cross-references and indexes and large sections of it, and I've got a big old notated copy in my study at church, and there's almost, I think if I remember, it's 47, but there are almost 50 times where the Quran commands you, if you want to be saved and if you want to be a follower of Allah, you must strive not only with your brain, but with physical force and violence. And that's a terrifying thing. When you get a billion people or so in one area of the world following that's a terrifying thing. That flies planes into buildings.
Yeah, you know, there are some parallels there between Islam and Mormonism, the way they came to be.
Yeah, they're all wrapped around one person.
New prophecy.
Yeah, this one person, this new mm-hmm. teaching, and man, if Jesus wasn't enough to pull off the job of telling us everything that we needed to know until he shows back up, how is he going to use anybody less than God?
Christianity is certainly so distinct from any of these other faith systems, or belief systems, I should say.
Yeah, it is. All the other religions primarily teach that there's a path, or there's a theology or a philosophy that you're supposed to follow, certain forms of submission. But only one religion really relies on a single individual being God in the flesh. And quite honestly, I'm working on my PhD right now. Mm. And my specialty, if all things continue as they are, is going to be the historicity of Jesus as miracle worker in the Gospels. So when we look at the Gospels, how certain can we be that they really are the real deal? Mm. And only Christianity has that much evidence.
And that's the stuff that Thomas Jefferson took out of his Bible, the miracles.
And I'd love to talk about that. It was a very bad idea to do that.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Femmel. And your calls, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
One of the core values of Concordia Seminary is faithfulness. Faithfulness to the Bible and the confessions of our church. Many people in America no longer believe that there is absolute truth. They say, you have your opinion, I have mine, all roads lead to heaven. But God has revealed truth. And we teach so that Concordia Seminary graduates will find winsome ways to present the truth.
Well, perhaps you can imagine how excited we are to have received an email from Russia. Hello, I am called Igor. I live in Russia. I really love listening to the radio, and recently I was lucky enough to find out about your wonderful radio station. You have interesting programs. Well, thanks, Igor. We appreciate that, and we do appreciate hearing from you. It's easy to send an email to the studio, kfuo@kfuo.org. kfuo@kfuo.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
A new study published in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology brings very good news. The number of doctors willing to do abortions has decreased by nearly half in the last 3 years. Demographics and religion play a big role in whether or not a doctor is willing to do abortions. Women are much more likely to perform them, as are Jewish doctors. Evangelical MDs are least likely, as are those who live in smaller cities or rural settings. Urban doctors are more inclined to do abortions. The age of a doctor plays a role. Younger and older doctors are more likely to do them. Those in their prime professional years are not. The decline's an answer to prayer and to hard work. Pro-life education is making an impact. And we need you to keep praying.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. God is our refuge and strength. Instead of delivering a speech, President Barack Obama read Psalm 46 at Ground Zero in New York on the 10th anniversary of the September 11th terror attacks.
The nations raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge.
Former President George W. Bush sought to console victims' families by quoting a letter from President Abraham Lincoln to a mother who lost all five of her sons in the Civil War.
I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement.
Later Sunday, President Obama began a memorial speech at the Kennedy Center by quoting Psalm 30.
Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning.
I'm Steve Coleman.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AM 850 KFUO underwriter.
How would you like to take the gospel global? You can do that by promoting and supporting KFUO Radio. If you'd like to donate to partner with this ministry, you can do it by going to kfuo.org and clicking the Give Now button. It's very simple from that point forward. You can do it all online. Our ministry presence is on the internet. It's local. It is global. We're taking the gospel around the world, and you can be an active partner with us. That's kfuo.org and click the Give Now button to support the ministry of KFUO Radio.
Let's ask the pastor, Mark Femmel, from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and that's where we're headed right now, to the phones. And Herman, you're on KFUO Radio with Pastor Mark Femmel.
Yes, Mr. Clayton and Pastor Femmel. Mr. Clayton, you read that article about the opinions of people have on the Muslims in the United States.
Yes.
I was assisting my late mother in shopping at a department store, and we were waited on by a Muslim lady who was an immigrant to the United States, whose Muslim husband had divorced her under Muslim regulations for a younger woman, and she was trying to support herself by that job, and we witnessed to her about Jesus Christ and the true authority of God's Word in the Bible. She received it very graciously. And as far as that article goes, if that's an intonation that American people are going to have to bow down to Sharia law and give up, if they're Christian, give up beliefs in the exclusive salvation of Jesus Christ, well, then the person who wrote that's got another thing coming.
The person that wrote that is with an outfit called the Religion News Service, Lauren Marco. And the headline in the Salt Lake Tribune read, "Poll, Americans still not as tolerant of Muslims and Mormons."
exactly how that's supposed to be taken. Does tolerant mean you give up your own beliefs in Jesus Christ? I'm sort of puzzled by the how that's supposed to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to implement Sharia law over and above our Bill of Rights and the Constitution. I question how that, if that's just kind of a guilt trip to put on people, then I don't agree with it.
And you'll find this fascinating too, Herman. It says here that Republicans, 55%, were more likely to call the perpetrator of a violent crime in the name of Islam a Muslim than were Democrats, 40%. At 57%, white evangelicals were far more likely to consider the perpetrator a Muslim than were Catholics, 39%, or black Protestants, 36%. A very unusual survey, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and there is essentially, whether you go, let's say, in a sense, practically for one side or the other, as you just looked there, it's still, there's truth in it. Yes, there were certainly terrorists, and it's certainly observable that there are three main branches of Islam, one of which is the Sufi movement, that is kind of a spiritualistic, mystical movement that doesn't engage in overt acts of violence, but that still doesn't mean that it is equal in truth to Christianity any more than any other non-Christian religion is.
You know, if I may jump in really quick, one thing that we have to be careful about is when we say that there's a peaceful form of Islam, they still gather around the Quran. And when people say that Islam is a religion of peace, especially in America, I would agree that almost all people who are Muslim in America are very peaceful people. But when they gather around a book as violent as the Quran, what if 1% of those people start paying attention and start taking the stuff literally? What if 0.5%? What if 0.01%? It takes one person to kill 200 people with a suicide bomb.
Yes, and we've seen apparently some 30-some Muslim-motivated attacks in this country on the part of sometimes just individuals themselves, like that Army officer in Texas at the military base.
Fort Hood, yeah.
And in other instances where they seemingly do it out of their own compulsion.
Right, and there are imams over in the Middle East that are saying, this is your God-given duty. If you're Muslim, rise up around the world and start killing. You don't need to wait for orders. You don't need to wait for directions. Just get something that kills people and put it to use.
Oh, indeed. And this has been an emphasis since Muhammad led Islam into a militant expansion centuries ago.
Right, but Christians should be sorry for the Crusades, which we are sorry. But I asked a Muslim one time, are you sorry for the jihad that that Muhammad and his near followers led from India throughout the Middle East and over to North Africa and Spain? And he said, why would we be sorry?
Well, exactly. Exactly. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Herman. Thanks for the call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk to David on KFUO Radio. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Thank you so much. I called last week with a similar question, but I had a good answer. I want to see if this pastor can expand on a little bit more as far as I left the Catholic Church for a number of reasons when I found out some of their deeper teachings. And one of them in their catechism is that Muslims and Jewish people worship the same God. And I, as Christians, and I just can't in my head comprehend that. Why, in their way of thinking, why would they put that in their catechism and say that Muslims worship the one true God as Christians? I left for other reasons, like they don't really believe in seven-day creation, more of an evolutionary process. They did not believe in a worldwide flood. They believe in a local flood. Those were some of the issues. I think a lot of Catholics don't really know what the Catholic Church teaches on certain issues. But the big whammy that got me was the Muslim issue. And could you please expand on that a little bit more? Why would they think like that? And I'll listen on the radio.
Thanks, David.
Well, sure. Awesome question. I actually I just finished up, I'm working on a Bible study right now. What does my neighbor believe? So we can kind of understand what other people believe and how they get there from the Bible. And we're primarily focused on Christians now. And then I think next year we'll pick up the series again and do non-Christians. But when we looked at Roman Catholics, I had gone through their catechism, which describes the teaching you just said right now. And if you look at the catechism, it does say from the Catholic Church, Pope and Cardinal and Archbishop approved and everything that, and therefore on the level of the Bible, according to what they believe, is that Muslims and Jews, because they claim to believe in the same God that came from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they have a special kind of like in clause that, though they don't worship him in the same way or with the same emphases, that they do worship him in spirit, and God overlooks their ignorance of the specifics. What's really odd is if you turn the page in that catechism, it actually says everyone who does what's within them. You know, so if they're raised as a Hindu, or if they're raised in America as a Wiccan, whatever it is, as long as they believe what they've been taught faithfully and devoutly, they're saved. Which means, if you're a Muslim, or if you're a little kid who's raised in Iran, and you are taught that God commands you to butcher Christians in the most heinous way possible, if you don't devoutly follow what you believe, you can't be saved. So the only way you can be saved is either be a Christian or butcher them. And it's bizarre that that would be an application, but when you look at what they're saying there, according to the letter, that's true. And that's just dark. And what that does is that flies right in the face of what Jesus says in John 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And some people get really upset that Christians are so exclusive. And all we're doing is we're following the Lord. So the problem is not with us, it's with Jesus. And I think it honestly kind of stems out of the position that it is not fun and not popular to say people are going to hell. According to the Catholic Catechism, the only people that end up in hell are those who knowingly believe that the Catholic Church is the only true church on earth and knowingly and willingly leave it. Well, I mean, that's like me saying, I know a $100 bill is worth a whole lot of money, but I'm going to rip it up. I'm going to get one out of the bank, rip it up, burn the ashes, and do it again. Well, I mean, if I know that $100 bill is really expensive, I'm never going to do it. So essentially, nobody goes to hell, according to the catechism. And for Jesus, that's different. He says, you know, fewer those who find the narrow door, and wide is the path that leads to destruction. We should flee sin. We should flee it. So, there you go.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jerry, you're on KFUO with Pastor Mark Femmel.
Hi, Pastor Mark. I admire your honesty in dealing with these issues. I feel the same way. First of all, I left Catholic Church because of these false teachings also. I just couldn't handle that. And not worshiping Christ and Christ alone. I couldn't handle that. Spreading all the worship out among all kinds of saints and, you know, whatever. You know the whole story of the Catholic Church. But, I wanted to ask you a question. I saw Bob Woodward interview. You remember him, the journalist who was embedded in with the troops and he got injured very badly? Bob Woodward, I think it's Bob.
I don't remember him, but
maybe
I do know
his name's not Bob.
The ABC correspondent.
Paul?
Yeah, the ABC correspondent. Yeah.
Exactly. And he had, and he's
Woodruff. His name's Woodruff. That's it.
I'm sorry. Bob Woodruff. Yeah, thanks for clearing it. Bob Woodruff, huh? Okay. And he had an interview with the cousin of Hassan, the cousin of the army psychiatrist who, her last name is Hassan. I don't remember the first name.
Yeah, Nidal Hassan, if I remember right.
Okay, yeah. And he's a cousin, you know, and he kind of represented himself in a family. And he said that they don't understand why this Hassan did what he did. Now, we understand because he read the Quran. But actually they said he really wasn't into reading the Quran. He wasn't into being real religious before he started reading the Quran. And if you know, anyone who really delves into that Quran and really takes it serious, they become very violent. Most of these people out there, the suicide bombers, Either they're just told to do things and they do it. But a lot of them, you know, that do study that Quran, they take it very seriously. And they do become very violent. And they do sanction all of this death and destruction and evil. And you know what kind of God is sponsoring that. It's not a God at all. It's just a deity known for those kind of things in our Bible. Now, I just want to tell you about that interview. You might be able to pick it up somewhere on the archives of NPR, our public broadcast, PBS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, could you tell me, how do we emphasize, I have my own thoughts on it, but how do we emphasize to the Muslim clergy, the imams, that these terror threats are totally unacceptable to Americans and to the world? It's totally uncivilized. I mean, we are not the Middle East. You don't drive truck bombs, these trucks with trucks bombs in them down the streets in America and blow us up. No, we're not the Middle East. You know, we are civilized. How do we emphasize? I have an idea that there are options that we can take. If they're going to push our buttons that far, there are options that our government, our military can take.
Well, there are two things. One is, I would actually venture to say that most people who read the Quran do not become violent.
Oh, okay. Nice to hear that. Because I'm under the impression that they do. But go ahead.
Sure.
I want your info.
Well, most of the people that read the Quran do not become violent.
Okay.
There's a trend, and Christians do it too with the Bible, in which you spiritualize everything. And some people, I'm not going to call them Christians, some people will say, well, we all know Jesus really couldn't walk on water. So what this is Jesus is rising above our troubles. That's what it's really about. Well, no, it's about he actually walked on water, and he's the king of creation. And when your life is in line with him, your life is in line with the guy who's running the show.
They make up their own interpretation.
Yeah. So they kind of spiritualize it. They'll say, like, this warring against the infidel is warring against the unfaithfulness within you and stuff like that. But then there are people who take it literally. And if you take it literally, you will become violent.
The Quran. But
yeah.
What can we do?
Well,
to emphasize to this clergy,
I've got great news.
What?
We've been under these same kind of pressures before, but even worse in the early Christian church.
Yeah.
The Romans sent people are driving bombs into military stations today, but before people would butcher kids in front of their Christian mothers, and we saw how they dealt with it. We see that they dealt with it the same way Jesus did.
But can't we put a stop to this? I mean, we can't.
Actually, we can.
There is a way to put a stop to this, at least to make them pause and say, well, their God is not.
There's only one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to tell them they're wrong, if you try to kill them, if you do anything like that, you are feeding into the psychosis that leads them to kill people. But the only way to do it is to allow them to see that God truly does so overwhelmingly overflow with love that he put someone who lives right next door to them, who's not going to make fun of them for being Muslim or attack them for being Muslim or forward on the jokes about the headscarves, but that says, hey, you know, I'd love to have you over for a barbecue or, let's do something. Let's, you want to, like, have a play date, you know, or something like that. Or if there aren't any kids, invite them for barbecue. Because then when they go to mosque and they have some radicalized imam saying, you got to kill people for Allah, they're going to remember, that person who lives next door to me is really nice. Why would God call me to kill somebody who is such a loving person?
You're partially correct. But you're also, you mingle with the Muslims and you're all friends and everything, which I have done. I have in the past. I don't anymore because of all this horror, going on. But there are some I know, and there are many, many I know that are very calm and polite and very, in fact, I lived in Turkey, for about almost 9 years, and secular, of course, and these are very peaceful. My gosh, you could walk down the street at midnight. Very peaceful. But when they get that Quran stuff going and all that Sharia law in, like, Saudi Arabia, all of them, whatever they preach in that type of, these different types of teachings of the Quran, it's a whole different story. Not that those people, I would say the Syrians are very peaceful people, but look what they're doing. They're torturing and killing right. their own people. They have no regard for life. We cannot put up with that till the end of the world, Pastor.
Oh, but Jerry, this is what we're called. This is the exact thing we're called to do. Pick up your cross and follow me, right? There's a story of this.
Look how many people will die.
Yeah. There's a story of a group of Christians, and I think the number was 39. But there are 39 Christians who were forced to swim out in the middle of this big old cold lake in the middle of winter under the Roman soldiers, under the Roman soldiers watching. And they were out, told to swim out there, and they heated up this bath on the beach of the lake. And they had warm water and everything, and they said, if you denounce Jesus, then we'll let you swim back over here to the lake, or to the beach, and we'll let you take a warm bath. And
the devil talking to him.
What's that?
It's like the devil talking to him, like the devil
yeah.
talked to Jesus.
But see, one Christian defected. Mm-hmm. I think the number is 39. One Christian defected. It means there's 38 out there, but 39 people died. One of the Roman centurions was one of the Roman soldiers was so convicted by the truth of their powerful love, their powerful devotion of God to love them that much, that he swam out there and died with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, but
see, this is what we're called to do. We're not called to pick up the sword. We're not called to pick up the nukes. We're not called to go, you know, sleep poison.
The point
we're
is,
called to allow them to see the love of God through us, and
right.
that's the limit of our call.
And now, Pastor, one more thing. They have some holy sites that they revere. They revere above all else. The imams do, not the suicide bombers, and not the ones instigating all this terror. They don't give a darn about holy sites. But is there any way we can emphasize to the imams, if you don't talk to your people and pull them back from the terror you're putting onto the world and to America, we have some options here. Is that wrong?
That we'll bomb
their
sites.
And make sure the people are out of the place. Nobody in there. We're not going to kill anybody. Don't want them to die. We want them to convert. But we don't want them to die.
You remember Jesus was walking around in Luke, in the middle of the Gospel of Luke, and he's walking mm-hmm. around in this town of Samaria. They reject Jesus, and James and John come up to Jesus and say, "Oh, Lord, can we call down fire from heaven and kill off all, punish these people? Then people will know not to mess with the Jesus boat."
Yeah.
And Jesus says, "That's not why I came."
Yeah,
and he still didn't come for us to do that now.
Trust in God, right? Trust in Christ.
See, vengeance is mine, says the Lord, and
right.
you know, he actually says, if when you're persecuted or hated, love your enemies, for by doing so, you'll be heaping burning coals on their head.
I
the greatest vengeance, if you want to get vengeance, the greatest vengeance is leave it up to God.
I hear you.
Thanks,
okay,
Jerry.
Thanks so much.
All right, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So why did Thomas Jefferson take all the miracles out of his so-called congressional Bible? But all the congressmen get one of those.
I
guess the senators get it.
Right. I mean, it's Thomas Jefferson, he's a brilliant guy. He should know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I was a big fan of his until I understood that.
Well, he came from a time where a lot of people were saying for the first time, well, there's no way God can actually do miracles. So clearly, since I've never seen Jesus walk on water, I've never seen somebody part the Red Sea, that stuff clearly didn't happen. Well,
even though creation's a miracle.
Yeah, well, they'll say, they'll disagree with you there. They'll say God kind of started off and then took a step back. And it's called deism. They believe there's a God, but that he's not involved whatsoever. But he took all that stuff out because he was under the influence of a lot of other people who said, because we've never seen miracles happen, there's no possibility that they could happen. Well, Paul, I've never seen China. So therefore, there must be no China. Now, I don't know if you've been to China, but let's say you have, and you tell me there's China. I'm going to say, I've never seen China. So how could I believe that you think there's a China? There's a Great Wall there? I haven't seen a Great Wall. They probably have regular walls in that fictitious place you've been to. I've never seen France. I've never seen Germany. I've seen part of Canada, but how do I know that globe's right? Maybe the world really is flat. So, you know, when we're looking at things, what we can't say, just because it doesn't make sense to me or the world that I've seen doesn't make it not true. It just means that I've got to test the sources. I've got to test the witnesses. And time and time and time and time again, when you test the Gospels and you test the Old Testament, archaeology, the consistency of the witnesses, the number of the witnesses, it time and time again proves that what we have in the Bible, word for word, is the Word of God, and it actually describes real miracles.
And when you mention the word miracle, one tends to think of Jesus performing those miracles. But the Old Testament is full of miracles, isn't it?
the most number of miracles that were ever done were in the Gospels. You see Jesus walk into a town and heal dozens, if not hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. But there are numerous miracles sprinkled throughout the Old Testament. But see, it wasn't like everybody every day saw 7 or 8 miracles. You know, a lot of times you think of the Old Testament being like the time of Jesus. You know, well, even during the time of Jesus, there were people in, you know, England who didn't see any of these miracles. So they're very rare and always around a single person who God was working through at the time. But, there's numerous miracles throughout the 4,000 years of the Old Testament.
The parting of the waters.
Parting of the waters, the manna, the drowning of the soldiers, the plagues. You get a couple of people
David
raised from
Goliath.
The dead. David and Goliath.
That's a miracle, isn't it?
You know, and I'm stepping outside the box here, but I looked up a Palestinian armor at the time, and they always have these huge nose pieces to protect the face, which means if David's rock launched out of his sling, went into Goliath's head, who's running into battle and therefore has all his armor on, that must have gone through some pretty serious layers of metal, not just the skull. Now, I think it's not described in the Bible because these people saw and they were just amazed that Goliath was dead. And you don't hear the shape of the rock. You don't hear the kind of sling that David had, how far he was. The Bible doesn't tell us all the details. It's very streamlined. It tells us only what we need.
So if this so-called Jefferson Bible doesn't have any miracles, it doesn't have the resurrection.
It does have him dead, though.
Hmm.
Yep.
I didn't realize that.
Yay, Thomas Jefferson. But see, this is a perfect example. If you want to see society built on equality and rights, see Jefferson. If you want, like, cooking tips, you don't see Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want cooking tips, you see Paula Deen, especially if you like butter. But if you want, like, financial advice, you don't see Paula Deen. You see that Clark Howard on CNN Headline News. But you don't see him if you want, like, marriage advice. You see marriage counselor. But so many people come to somebody and say, well, they're good in this way. They must be great in every way. And they do that with rock stars and with actors. They say, well, these people make a lot of money, so certainly they're going to tell me how I should live life and priorities and ways I should be nice to people and not be nice to people, which charities to give to, be tolerant, you know, all religions are the same. And it's like, you know, you don't ask a plumber to come and roof your house, you know, because he's really good at plumbing, unless your plumber's really good at roofing. But, you know, people have specialties, and you got to pay attention to that. You know, Thomas Jefferson is great at politics, bad at human rights with his slaves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these musicians that people and these models that people listen to and these superstars of Hollywood, they're great. If you want to know how to write a song, get a show, but don't look at them for religious advice. If anything, if they're that successful in Hollywood, they're probably not going to have all the time to really think about religion, like Paula Deen. She's so good at cooking, she probably doesn't have the time to be a specialist at marriage counseling. I mean, it's just, the more you specialize in one thing, the less you specialize in everything else.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've known some successful people through the years, and because he was good at this, at insurance sales, for instance, then he considered himself to be a genius on everything.
Yep. Yep. Idolatry starts with I, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Good point.
I pick and choose my idols.
Pastor Mark Femmel, your service hours are when at your church?
Oh, Sunday morning, 8 o'clock and 10:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come on fourth Sundays until the new church year, we're doing sermon topics by request. And so, awesome stuff.
That's right. I forgot to mention that. You do take requests.
Every month, fourth Sundays, we do topics by request.
Good to have you here. Thank you.
My privilege.
Pastor Mark Femmel from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Stay tuned. Moments of Assurance coming up next with Pastor Mark Hawkinson. Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
If it's in the headlines, we'll think about it. If it's a topic of conversation at the water cooler, we'll discuss it. If it's something we need to remember, I'll remind you. Hi, this is Dale Meyer, inviting you to hear the Meyer Minute on KFUO Radio. weekday mornings and afternoons, I'll bring you fresh commentary from a Christian perspective. The Meyer Minute, addressing today's topics the way God sees it on KFUO Radio.